Nikki P. You're my boy, Ro.
Eddie Z and Revivals. Charlie's Angels, come on.
Question, how many angels have there been? Do you guys know? Because today we're going to be talking about Charlie's Angels. Do you guys have a favorite? Is it the original 1970s? Is it the 2000 remake? Or is it the most recent? I guess they're not remakes. They're actually technically all revivals.
Reboots.
Revivals.
Reboots.
And I want to argue this how they're all revivals. So today we're talking about Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels, come on.
We've never seen Charlie until, I would argue also, the most recent version. And I think between the three of us, we all might have a different angel that we embody.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I think so. So
yeah.
That's it, guys. We're talking about Charlie's Angels. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality.
So welcome, guys. Here we are on a beautiful, cold November day. We're almost at Thanksgiving.
Actually, Thanksgiving is this week.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is in a couple of days.
Well, how do you do? Can you do the gobble noises? That's actually pretty good.
Thank you. Can you?
Pretty good. Was it?
Okay. Yeah. You ever see the video of the guy who's like by like a cage of 50 turkeys and he just keeps going like, and then they all go like back at him?
No.
It's a great video.
I'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah.
All right.
You guys should check it out this Thanksgiving season.
It is Thanksgiving. It is a season to give thanks.
It is. And we are thankful for our producer who is always with us to keep us in check, Eddie Z. We're thankful for you.
Thank you. I'm thankful for you guys too.
Aw. And we're thankful for you, our listeners.
Yes. And are you thankful for us? You should show us by making sure you like us on Instagram. Our Instagram is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
You can send us an email and show us your love there. Email us at remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter if you just search for Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
And if you feel like being festive this holiday spirit, find us on Apple Podcasts and give us a review. We'd love to know. And the rest of the world can get a first impression of what you think of our show.
Yes, we've actually seen some reviews as of late.
Yeah.
All positive. So keep them coming, guys. But back to topic.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Charlie's Angels today. We're first going to be talking about the TV show, which came out in 1976,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the earliest versions of Jiggle TV.
Yes. And what is Jiggle TV?
Jiggle TV is basically just like hot women front and center and kind of being scantily clad.
Yeah, like soft porn.
Hypersexualized. Yeah. You know, the arguments for Charlie's Angels was that it was just soft core porn. And it was Aaron Spelling's TV show. So, of course it was.
We actually just recently talked about Aaron Spelling television shows 2 weeks ago in our Charmed episode. You should definitely listen to that one.
And like I said then, and I keep saying it now, he was TV royalty and is still TV royalty.
And I'll say like I did then, I guess. So let's talk about 1976 in terms of television. According to the Nielsen ratings for that year, the most watched programs in the United States were at number one, Happy Days. Big hit of a TV show.
Everybody still knows it.
I mean, the Fonz, you know. Two was Laverne and Shirley.
Who?
Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, Laverne and Shirley.
We're gonna do it our way. Yes, our way. Making our dreams come true. Okay.
It's
a great song. Number three was the ABC Monday Night Movie, because back then, you know, that was the only way to watch movies at home. That was a big
TV
thing.
TV made.
Mm-hmm. Number four was MASH, another big TV show that ran for like 10 seasons.
I thought it ran for more.
It probably did run for more, actually, yeah. I think like maybe even like 12 or something.
That show was also super depressing.
And coming in at number five was, indeed, Charlie's Angels, its debut. Beat out shows like One Day at a Time, which was at number eight.
Wow.
That's a little top 10.
And Three's Company at 11 and All in the Family at 12, which is surprising. But I think maybe these shows were maybe dying at this time. I don't know. So, Charlie's Angels.
Once upon a time, there were three little girls who went to the police academy. And they were each assigned very hazardous duties. But I took them away from all that, and now they work for me. My name is Charlie.
was created by Ivan Groff and Ben Roberts and produced by Aaron Spelling. And we can really give it to him in terms of the casting of this show.
Mm-hmm.
So what is Charlie's Angels about? It's pretty much about a small detective agency.
Very small. The Townsend Detective Agency.
The Townsend Agency that is run by anonymous man who we only see through a speakerphone, and we sometimes get a glimpse at his back, and he is Charlie.
A millionaire benefactor.
Yes. And he is voiced by John Forsythe.
Yes, John Forsythe.
And he's a voice that will be, I think, the one thing that concludes in every single iteration of Charlie's Angels.
Was John Forsythe in the most recent one?
Kind of. Working for him are his angels. And also his right-hand man, Bosley, played by David Doyle. And in this version, I'm pretty sure his name is Bosley. And then there's three angels. There's always only three angels. And they all kind of like cover different things. In the first season, there's Kate Jackson, who plays Sabrina Duncan, who's more of the intelligent, you know, works more with her mind, thought-provoking one.
Sure.
There's Farrah Fawcett, who plays Jill Monroe. Mm-hmm. And she's the athletic one. And she's also, you know, more of the actress.
And the blonde.
And the blonde.
And basically the TNA.
Yes.
Because if I saw anyone like practically almost nude a lot, mm-hmm. it was Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah, I mean,
season one.
She really exploits her sex. I don't know. We'll get to that in a second.
I don't think she exploited it herself. I think
it did the TV show.
It's definitely the, what's it called? It's definitely.
Does, well, she has a lot of sex appeal.
She does.
Well, certainly does.
And when you think about appeal. The 70s, what do you think about in terms of hair? You think Farrah Fawcett mm-hmm. hair. You know, Farrah Fawcett was definitely. And it's, I just remember how like long ago she died. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, she died the same day as Michael Jackson.
Yes, that's right.
She died the same day as Michael Jackson. So it's Mo Rocca. He has this great podcast called mm-hmm. Mobituaries. And part of the reason he started it was because Farrah Fawcett died the same day as Michael Jackson, but everyone only talked about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So poor Farrah Fawcett kind of got like swept aside because yeah. the bigger story was Michael Jackson's
Michael Jackson.
Death. It's
poor
crazy,
Farrah Fawcett,
right?
Rest in peace. And then to even it out, they wanted a brunette, they wanted a redhead, and they wanted a blonde. They did not get a redhead. They instead got Jacqueline Smith, the only one who auditioned for the role.
Because
Kate Jackson was in a different television show at that time. And
oh,
she
yeah,
was
yeah.
really
she
in
was
demand.
In, like, the Rookie or something? Rookies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's get her. Farrah Fawcett, I think they just kind of saw her. I don't even know where, but like she did an audition. The mm-hmm. only one who auditioned was this, I think, commercial actress at the point, uh-huh. Jacqueline Smith. And she plays Kelly Garrett. And I feel like Kelly Garrett's also, she's supposed to be the bombshell. Even though the one that really like got popular, became like the sex appeal favorite of the audiences was Farrah Fawcett.
Yes.
And the show, the bombshell really is supposed to be Jacqueline Smith as Kelly Garrett.
Yes. Fun fact.
Uh-huh.
Jacqueline Smith is like Eddie's hero.
Really? Why?
She's my favorite angel.
She's and my favorite angel
and
too.
And also as an actress, I love basically everything she does.
Aw, that's so cute. What else has she done?
She does a lot of Lifetime. Lifetime television.
That's so endearing.
But she's just great.
Well, she's very, also, other than the John Forsythe voice, I think that Jacqueline Smith and Kelly Garrett is one of the lasting things in every iteration of Charlie's Angels.
Yes, and the name Bosley.
And the name Bosley, oh, yes.
And Charlie.
And angels.
Yeah.
But... yeah. And three women.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. Three women and the Bosley character, like, mm-hmm. making sure, like, giving them not even, he doesn't really give them orders. He's like there, he's like the right hand, he's also there to like assist them, because in the original TV show I was surprised at how involved he was mm-hmm. in terms of like, you know, wearing costumes and like kind of helping them play their characters. For example, in the first episode, like, he plays the deacon or something
mm-hmm.
and I forgot which, I'm sorry, so all the angels at a certain point kind of look the same.
No, they don't.
No.
Oh, because the masks.
Yeah,
the
like all their
stuff.
Costumes. Like, it's yeah. just like hard to like keep track of who's who.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the one, I think it was actually Sabrina, who mm-hmm. was like a race car driver. She was
yes.
playing. Okay, she
was
a playing
race car driver. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was also the daughter of the deacon and stuff. And
yes.
It was like, yeah.
Well, so the first episode was kind of like their big pitch for ABC. Is it ABC?
It was ABC, but it okay. was not their first pitch. That was a different episode.
It was a different episode. And then that became the
pilot.
First
Yeah, the
first
pilot episode. Is like almost like a TV movie.
Yeah. But the first episode is about a murder that happens on a racetrack. So the angels go undercover and
Which
try
is
to
a
figure out
messed
what they're.
Up murder. Like,
yeah, she just hits a wall and blows up. So crazy. And then they're all assigned different tasks. And Bosley is very much involved within this. He's not just there barking orders on the side for them. Like, you know, he's like part of the ruse and everything.
I would say that he never just barks orders. He's very much, I don't know, he's like almost like he feels less like the second in command, mm-hmm. and more much a part of the agency.
But also it kind of like, so he's a man, mm-hmm. within the group, but he's not like
hot.
Like he's not like it's not like, oh, a possible mate.
Yeah.
But just a fun fact though, how Farrah Fawcett, so Aaron Spelling had chosen her after he saw her performance in Logan's Run.
Oh, Logan's Run.
Which is gonna get Which is getting, I think, a reboot treatment.
Yeah. Which we might do in the future.
Which we might do.
Yeah.
I'm willing. We still have the energy to keep doing these
remakes. Oh, we do.
But so in the first episode, you know, you really see that they are this detective agency. They're con men. You know, they're breaking and entering artists. They're, you know, they're kind of like jacks of all trades within getting the information that they need. And I really felt like sex appeal wasn't as big of a thing in the first episode as it later became. Like, I really think that the show starts off with they're a proper detective agency. I mean, the episode was even kind of boring because it was so much about like finding out this information, yeah, and the mystery of it. But later on, if you watch a couple of episodes,
we're talking like episode three, like Farrah Fawcett's like in a towel and some guy breaks into her room.
Yeah.
And she's like, excuse me, sir, I'm in my towel.
Well, what was that one comment she made in the first episode where he was like, what's your religion or something? And she says, and then she gives him her measurement.
Oh my God. Yeah. What's your denomination?
Yes.
Is what he said.
His denomination. 25, 32.
And I was just like, wow,
I was like, oh my God.
This is dirty. I love
it. Yeah.
I'm actually like, I'm surprised at kind of how risque the show could be.
Yes.
To be totally honest, like I understand where parents are coming from calling it Jiggle TV.
Yeah.
Because some of the innuendo was pretty much
straightforward. Yeah, it was innuendo.
And this is even by 2019 standards. I'm just like, whoa. I mean, I was clutching pearls.
Yeah. You know. So Farrah Fawcett in particular too, I felt like in the episodes that I at least called and I watched, was more used for her sexuality.
Yeah, you know, blonde bombshell. That makes sense.
So do you think that, now this is a question, now a lot of people call it Jiggle TV, and a lot of people thought that these people, the women were being sexually exploited.
Sexploited,
yes. Do we think that it's something that the characters were aware of to get information that was written into the script, or it's kind of like the producers are exploiting their own cast, or is it in a mix of both? Like, what did you take from the episodes you watched?
Interesting question. I actually think, mm-hmm. and this is something that we'll see more in the next few movies.
Yes.
But I think these women were well aware of their sexual appeal, mm-hmm. and that's why they would be able to do the things that they can do.
I think so.
I mean, obviously it was the producers and writers, but like the characters themselves clearly knew the power they possessed as women.
Yes.
To do things that just some men can't do, which is, you know, I mean, in spy culture and spy films, it's called the honeypot. And that's what these women played.
For sure. Now, we also have to remember that the writers of this show were mainly men.
Yes.
So it's also a very clever way to really like pander to the exploits of women's sexuality and then get away with it properly. Mm-hmm. So like when Farrah Fawcett gave that line, I was like, I know what you're doing. Like, and I applaud you because you're like, you're just going right for it. You need this guy to like, you need to set a trap. So like, this is how you get him. But at the same time, you're like taking it back, you know, clutching pearls. And it's just like, whoa, that was a lot.
It was definitely a lot. Like, I'm not saying, by no means is this show like as risque as the stuff that we see now in media.
Yes.
But it's just the idea that I have in the 1970s. Like, I would expect something to be a little more almost like innocent and pure hearted. I'm clearly wrong.
Yeah. Watch more shit, man. Happening. Well, the 70s were also like this awakening of culture, you know, especially in film, and a lot of it transferred down to television. Mm-hmm. Like, the code was lifted. We could show things like sex, drugs, and nudity and all this stuff and homosexuality for the first time and give an accurate portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Watergate and cynicism and all this stuff. So the 70s, you know, were crap.
Yeah. No, I mean, it shows on this TV show.
Yes. That was why it was almost too intense that at the late 70s into the 80s, there was this whole conservative backlash.
Makes sense.
Which was this big thing. And then I feel like every other decade is that.
And you could argue that happens also based off of who's in office, because they also, for example, the FCC, whichever party has the office, mm-hmm. they pick three out of the five And then the opposing party picks the other two people.
Yes,
the
FCC, that makes sense.
And then they're the ones who dictate, you know, the code for televisions for that.
No, I mean, it makes sense that in the Reagan era, you know, all of our films are just like happy endings and bland.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, anywho, another really iconic thing of Charlie's Angels, I would say, is its theme song.
I would say it's actually the opening montage.
The opening montage.
It's like three women, three young girls went to police academy or something.
Yeah, right? But they were given terrible tasks. Now they work for me.
Yeah.
And then just the girls doing their shit, like, and some of it's ridiculous, you know, they're just like,
a lot of running,
a lot of hair. Jacqueline Smith is literally just like hair toss after hair toss.
Yes, she is.
But that image of the three girls posing together with their guns is iconic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you get girls together in a pose and a lot of them, if they like, I do a silly pose. Most of the girls will do like a Charlie's Angels
pose. Of course,
you know, it's like, it's really embedded in our pop culture.
It really became timeless.
It did.
Yeah.
Yes. So the theme song, the pose, just the idea of like, you know, three crime fighting badass women, even though there was a lot of drama within this TV show.
A lot of the drama happened because Farrah Fawcett wanted to leave the show.
Yeah, I think it was over money.
Was it over money? I thought she might have just realized. Oh, keep in mind, this show was a runaway hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like the moment, like these women became overnight celebrities. Basically,
they did. Yeah,
like they have talked about it on camera how their lives changed immediately without even realizing. And as we know, like when your life changes so quickly, the other thing that comes with it is your personal life.
Yes.
And women's personal lives went to shit.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking divorce, we're talking substance abuse problems, plastic surgery, out the wazoo, you know? So, and it's, you know, it's one of those like, you know, tale as old as Hollywood.
Yeah.
Of just like what happens when you become famous.
Unfortunately.
Quickly. Yeah.
It's so common.
It is. But yeah, so Farrah Fawcett, she gave in her resignation papers after one season.
I think she also didn't want to commit to a 5-year contract.
Which is what, right. And so Aaron Spelling and ABC sued her.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
she didn't fulfill her contracts. Yeah.
They own you. And, you know, was ABC owned by Disney at the time? That's the question.
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm curious.
Because Disney also, this was in the time period where they were struggling at this period.
Oh.
Yeah. So they came back within the late 80s, 90s.
Not the case anymore.
Not Disney struggle. But it's so interesting too, because Farrah Fawcett, I think, like, is the first people that people think of when they think of Charlie's Angels. And she was in it for one season.
Right.
And then, so she got replaced with Cheryl Ladd as her sister.
Chris Monroe.
Yeah. Farrah was Joe Monroe. Then there was Chris Monroe. Kate Jackson afterwards was not happy that Farrah was off the show. Like, they all had a really good time. They had good chemistry for the first season, and Kate Jackson and Cheryl Ladd did not get along. So there was a lot of drama there. And then Kate Jackson actually lost out on a movie opportunity because of Charlie's Angels. She was supposed to be in a movie called Kramer versus Kramer.
Really? Oh, that's such a good movie. Wait, was she supposed to be the wife?
She was offered the role.
No way.
Mm-hmm. Who got that role? And,
Meryl Streep.
And that was where she won her first Oscar. That was the best picture winner that year. I don't know why. But then it was like this
big thing.
That movie's
good.
And was it the best picture of 1979?
I don't know what else came out that
Apocalypse
year.
Apocalypse Now?
No.
What?
I think it's a good directed film, but
because
I don't think
it's Deer Hunter won in 1978. They couldn't give it to two Vietnam films back to back, but the clear best Vietnam film ever made to me is Apocalypse Now.
To be honest, I actually prefer the documentary from Apocalypse
Heart of Darkness.
Now. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a much better movie than Apocalypse
there
Now.
There are hand in hand. No, Apocalypse. Okay, we're going to talk about this later. But I also
if this
feel
movie ever gets remade, we'll talk about it then.
Kramer versus Kramer is great because it sets up, like, it's the precursor Lifetime movie. This and Ordinary People and Terms of Endearment, you know, all those Oscar winners within 5 years of each other. So they were, like, big at the time. Kate Jackson was so pissed that she missed out on this role, and then she became highly difficult to work with, and then they terminated her contract. And they're like, okay, bye.
At least she didn't get sued.
At least she didn't get sued. She got kicked out.
Yeah.
I think that's what she wanted, though, at that point. So the only one that lasted all five seasons was Jacqueline Smith. Some of the other girls that came to replace.
Well, we had Tanya Roberts.
Yay.
Who was in the final season, and Shelley Hack, who played Tiffany Wells in season four. So there was just a lot of turnaround for these ladies.
Kate Jackson was also upset because she felt like the show was changing from detective work to like Cop of the Week shows. And
just, oh, interesting. Like... Okay, so I guess I only saw the first early seasons, episodes from the first early seasons, because, like, I will say this about the show.
Yeah.
The mysteries actually still hold up. I think, like, watching the show, that was a kind of just, like, enthralled by the storylines of, like, kind of figuring, I mean, I love a good mystery, like, who's done it, and this show kind of delivered that for me. And on top of that, some of the action, like, all right, so here's the thing I will say about this show too, which is a different from what I know Charlie's Angels now to be.
Yeah.
But the action sets were not that, like, high fanciful, high karate.
No.
There was not often a very big gunfight or something. Usually there was a gun pointed, but, like, for the most part, they would, like, quickly deactivate the situation.
They would kick and punch and
But for the most part, like, for example, I saw one of the episodes. I forgot who, I want to say it was Chris. No. Kelly, I think it was Kelly. She was being held hostage because, as it turned out, the killer turned out to be the chief surgeon of the hospital, right?
Yes.
So, like, she's in his office and stuff, and, like, he has a gun pointed at her. But what she does, she de-escalates the situation. Oh, there was another good one with Chris. Did you see this one where, like, she's stuck in, I think they were, like, it was, like, a tennis episode, if I remember correctly. I saw this one on way back when, but it's a great sequence because she is in a locker room and some guy's, like, trying to, like, murder her. And so what does she do? She starts pushing, like, lockers on top of him, right? And then jumping on top of him. It was like a, like, for I must have been a teenager watching this episode, but it was, like, kind of high exhilarating, just like, you go, girl. And then the Charlie's Angels come in and save her, you know. But I remember, like, the show, and even rewatching it now for the podcast, like, the show actually still holds up.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, it's not something I'm going to go out of my way to watch, but having watched them, just like, you know what? These are pretty solid episodes. The first, and this must be the first three seasons. Yeah. I haven't seen all five seasons.
I haven't seen them either, and I can't really be, like, an authority on the show either, but I really liked the fact that they were, like I said, jack of all trades. You know, they were able to use their brains and use their bodies.
And they use their bodies. I don't think they ever went full, like, right? Like, they never actually had sex.
I know.
Yeah, I've seen most of I've never, I don't remember ever watching that.
Okay.
I know there was always kind of that hint of sex appeal moment, but it was never like.
But they never went full.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Now, can I ask you, from if you saw a lot of it, they really also used more combative skills than they did, like, weapons.
Yes.
And that was something that I also liked, is that these women were trained. You know, they a lot of them came from the police academy, and they were, like, really well, like, they knew karate, and they knew how to physically defend themselves. And that was, that's inspiring to see.
For sure.
Any woman do that.
And I think without a show like this, you wouldn't get, like, a show like Charmed, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, or I would argue Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Again, you have, like, this beautiful little blonde girl, like, kicking ass and stuff. I mean, keep in mind, like, Charlie's Angels, because of their presence on TV, kind of gave way to kind of this action fighting female lead. And I think actually you see it a lot now in, like, shows aimed for kids. Like, Totally Spies is basically a ripoff of Charlie's Angels. Kim Possible, I would argue, is clearly a ripoff of Charlie's Angels. You know what I mean? And I think it's good to kind of give women and girls, like, kind of their own heroes.
Oh, I think
who, I mean, who do we have? Kojak? You know?
Is that who we have?
Oh. We.
You talk about that time period?
Well, definitely that time period.
$6 Million Man. Lee Majors, which Farrah Fawcett was married to. That was her first husband.
Yeah, Farrah Fawcett Majors. In the credit, opening credits, you saw her name as
that. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't.
Yeah. Like we said, it's embedded in our pop culture. You know, it's had its lasting impact, and it's still, like, stayed as something that we can, like, recognize. That's Charlie's Angels.
There's so many good things that happened in the 80s and 90s.
With Charlie's Angels?
With Charlie's Angels.
Like what?
I just want to go through them. All right. So there was a spinoff in the works. Which
Tony's
Angels.
Tony. Sorry. I did my research too, Edwin. But go on.
Tony's Boys. Season 4, episode 23, where a friend of Charlie's, kind of this this rich widow, decides to has her own agency. And she has three young men with the idea of it becoming its own. So it was a back backdoor pilot.
Okay, wait. So it was going to be the opposite,
right? Yeah, it was going to be three men.
Oh, interesting. Were they hot?
Tony's boys, because her name was Antonia. Uh-huh. So it was going to be Tony's boys. And supposedly, yeah. I mean, what the idea was is that they were good-looking men.
Hmm. You would watch that.
I totally would have watched that.
A wealthy widow socialite, a friend of Charlie's who ran a detective agency. Mm-hmm. And she was to staff three good-looking male detectives.
Man, detective Ooh. Agencies were hot in the 70s and 80s, weren't
they? Yes, they were. Oh, yeah. Murder, She Wrote?
Murder, She Wrote. Yeah, mm-hmm. I actually just...
Very popular during this time period, late 70s, early 80s, is having these crossover events, mm-hmm. especially with Aaron Spelling's shows. Okay. Yeah, so okay. The Angels did appear on an episode of The Love Boat. Mm-hmm. Episode was called Love Boat Angels.
Oh, love.
That's an original title.
Okay. And as we know, what I've recently discovered.
Wait, Love Boat is Aaron Spelling?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. TV royalty.
All right. So there's been many reboots of Charlie's Angels.
Yes.
Not only in.
Reboots or revivals?
They say reboots here.
The Ooh. Movies are revivals.
88, they were trying to do a show called Angels 88. It took a long time to get things started, so they changed the title to Angels 89. Oh. It never got off the air. Okay.
It was supposed to be like Charlie's Angels?
Yeah, it just never got in the air. So Telemundo and Sony produced their own Charlie's Angels, Angeles.
What?
Yes. It was a weekly hour format, but it didn't catch on with Hispanic viewers.
Oh, that's such a shame. We're
introduced with more.
Oh, I wish we could have seen some episodes for this episode. Seriously. That would have been awesome to see.
Germany, 2002, had theirs called I can't say it. Will be translated Wild Angel.
Oh.
The French had their version. And the English had three Wild Angels.
Hmm. Jesus. I have a wild is the important word to describe these women.
And in 2009, ABC... revive the show Charlie's Angels.
How many seasons was that?
It was one season.
It's seven episodes, though.
No, it was eight episodes.
Oh, eight.
Seven aired, but it was canceled by its fourth season, by its fourth episode.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, it was that much of a flop.
It was a flop.
Yeah, we're sorry.
So it was supposed to it was trying to capitalize off of the movie that we're going to be talking about right now.
Do you remember any movie that came out in the year 2000? Can you guess what the highest grossing film was that year? Mm. I don't think you can, but I want to see if you can.
Crossroads?
Are you kidding me?
First of all, 2002.
Now 2002?
That's 2002.
Okay.
The highest grossing film of the year 2000 was another movie version of a TV show.
Movie version of a TV show. Wait. It's not Charlie's Angels.
It's not. It wasn't even in the top 10.
Okay. So if it's not Charlie's Angels, what else came out that Starsky and Hutch?
That was 2004.
Wait, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Brady Bunch?
That was 1995, with the sequel being in, I think, 98.
This is why
Adam's Family.
This is why I want you on my trivia team, Nicole.
Adam's Family.
1991, 1993.
Okay. We just did that episode. I should know.
I'll tell you it's a sequel.
Oh, it's a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
And if I tell you who stars in it, it's going to give it away.
All right, go ahead. Just tell me the star.
Tom Cruise.
That doesn't count.
Really?
Oh, Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible 2.
Okay. I was actually going to say Top Gun. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound right.
That was 85. No, 86. But I will tell you that makes a lot of sense because I think last year another Mission Impossible movie came out. They keep making these Mission Impossible movies.
They do.
They're so successful.
I haven't seen a single one.
Yeah, the first one was good because it was directed by Brian De Palma. That's it.
Hmm.
Even though the second one was directed by John Woo. So the highest grossing film in 2000 was Mission Impossible 2. Then it was Gladiator.
Oh.
The Oscar winner of that year, Castaway. What Women Want, which we have covered in an episode called Get Yours with What Women Want and What Men Want.
Yes.
A Disney movie called Dinosaur was number 5.
Mm.
Never saw that.
Oh, I remember it. Yeah. It was fine.
I remember when it came out. It was a big thing. And then it was.
They have a good ride in Disney World, though.
Is that what it's based on?
It's an Animal Kingdom, yeah.
Oh, I love that ride.
Mm-hmm.
6 is How the Grinch Stole Christmas, another episode that we have done for this podcast called Do Who's Have Sex.
Really? How the Grinch Stole Christmas actually cracked the top 10?
It actually cracked the top 10. Ugh. 7, Meet the Parents. 8, The Perfect Storm. 9, X-Men. And 10, What Lies Beneath.
Really?
But we're not talking about any of those movies.
I'm surprised at how many not franchises there were in that list.
Yeah, and X-Men only 9, but this is also before.
Yeah, this is actually over. The dawning of what would become the comic book era.
And to me, the best movies of that year weren't there. Almost Famous isn't on the top 10. Traffic isn't in the top 10. Crouching Tiger's not in the top 10. Aaron Brockovich is not in the top 10.
That was also that year.
That's all 2000. Mm. And also Mick G's film version of Charlie's Angels.
Now, is Mick G the same guy, American Mick G, or is that someone else?
I think that's someone else. Oh, I think Mick G is just Mick G.
Okay.
So Charlie's Angels stars a really, really great cast, I think.
Yes.
It's Cameron Diaz.
Cameron D.
As Natalie Cook. Drew Barrymore. Your girl,
my
Drew.
My girl, Drew.
As Alex. Uh-huh. I forget her last name.
No, her name was, it was a boy's name. It's
Dylan.
Dylan, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, Dylan.
It's not a boy's name, but like traditionally we think of Dylan as a boy's name.
Yeah, it's really close-minded of you, Orlando.
The way it came off was close-minded, but I meant like traditionally speaking, like we think of Dylan's as a
Dylan man. Sanders. Dylan Sanders. And Alex Monday is played by Lucy Liu. And in this movie, I think the Townsend Agency that was running from the 70s and the early 80s is still very much running, and they still have angels working for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a new man whose name is also Bosley.
They have a Bosley played by
Bill Murray.
Yes.
So these angels are very much the same kind in the sense where they're combatively skilled. They're detectives. They're also con women, and they use their sex appeal.
Okay. Yes, sex appeal. But in terms of combatively skilled, like these women are like five steps ahead of like the original cast.
Oh yeah, no, these are women are martial arts experts. Yeah,
like these are.
So Drew Barrymore owns the screen rights, big producer, one of three producers of this film. She is incredibly anti-gun.
She's anti-gun.
Yeah, she's anti-gun, doesn't believe in guns, and doesn't want them in her movies.
Interesting.
So she insisted that the angels never use guns. Mm-hmm. And they only use their skills. I think that was a good move.
I'm thinking about it now. I can't say I didn't realize that the women never used guns.
You didn't even realize
guns.
That. Isn't that crazy?
Well, there were a lot of guns in the movie.
Yeah, just they never used it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
She thinks.
Although Angel does use it in the next one.
Yeah, Full Throttle was not very good. But the first one was surprisingly good. When I first put it on, I was blown away by the 2000s of it all. LL Cool J.
LL Cool J in a very kind of a racist representation. Yeah. Of...
Mm-hmm. All the different actors and stuff. And then like even the CGI, you know, like, but I remember specifically being in the theater and watching that and being cool. And now you're at home and I'm like, oh my God, I know how to do that. You know, it's not very.
Crouching Tiger had come out in America this year, right?
Yes.
It had not. But it had already been out in...
No. The big movie that affected this was The Matrix.
I would also argue some of the fighting style was almost very much reminiscent of Crouching Tiger. I know that Guillermo del Toro does credit this movie for kind of bringing that kind of action style front and center, even more so than The Matrix.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of turned it into... The Matrix was stylized, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of becomes a defining moment in that genre. But Charlie's Angels kind of turned it into pop culture.
They did, yeah, because a lot of people, when you did that after The Matrix came out, you were spoofing The Matrix. Mm-hmm. Charlie's Angels was not spoofing it. It was like taking it and doing it their own way.
Right.
And that is the one thing that it's also like, it's very much early 2000s, mm-hmm. but it still holds up.
The movie itself does hold up. I don't know if the action sequences hold
Why?
Up.
Why?
I don't know.
But are we thinking of it in terms of 2019 or like its era?
Maybe its era is what I'm thinking about.
You don't even think it's good for its era?
I don't even think, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I was kind of figure. I wasn't like as into it as I was when it first came out.
Yeah, well, the movie
maybe
is...
because it seemed at certain points cartoonish.
Yeah, well, the whole movie, it does not take itself seriously at all.
No, it does not. Unlike the original Charlie's Angels, which was
yes, more very dramatic.
Yes, it was a drama.
Yeah. This movie it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mystery to it. And I think this movie also sets up any further iteration that you kind of need this big mystery to take it over. Because every other version now has this big mystery of like, who done it? Who is it really? Who can we trust? And mm-hmm. all this stuff, which kind of gets exhausting after a while for me, where it's does it always have to be like someone's lying?
Someone is always lying.
Someone is always lying, guys.
This is what we will learn.
You can't trust anyone. This also had fucking Tom Green in it when Drew Barrymore was married to Tom Green.
I remember what a hot mess of a relationship that was.
Yes. So publicized and everything. A lot of drama went on in this set too. But let's talk about a little bit about the plot. It's really simple. There's this multimillionaire who created this
voice recognition software.
And Roger Corman, played by Tim Curry. Is supposedly trying to steal it from the maker, who is he's a red herring, though. Played by Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
But it turns out that Sam Rockwell is indeed the bad guy, and he wants to get the voice recognition software to locate the boss of the Angels, Charlie, because he has beef with him. He killed his father, he thinks. So he has all of these different people that he pretty much fools the Angels into getting him and helping him with his ruse. Mm-hmm. One of them being the Thin Man, played by Crispin Glover.
Yes, I was actually trying to see to learn if like the Thin Man was an inspired criminal from like the original run. I could not get an answer. I think this is an original.
So sorry.
Okay. I could not get an answer. I think the Thin Man is like an original creation from John August, one of the writers, who we will see kind of an iteration of him in 2019's version.
These Angels also, the three girls are very more, I think even more so than the original Charlie's Angels, very different in personalities.
Yes.
That makes it easier for the audience to get to know them quicker. But I think that Alex is the more stern and the more, I guess, intelligent one of the bunch.
Lucy Liu?
Yeah, she's also more of like the science one.
Yes.
She knows more of like the codes and technical stuff. There's Natalie Cook with Cameron Diaz, who's the goofy one, but she's also the most athletic.
Yes.
And she's, I think, the strongest in the combat.
Yes. She's also the dancer.
The dancer, yes. Who has a musical number in both films. Then there's Dylan.
Dylan. What would you say Dylan's strength is?
I don't know.
That's a good... she has some strength. I mean, we saw her take down like an entire group of men while her hands are tied behind her back. And
she's also
like,
good at... She's the rebel. She's the badass. Yeah. She's the slut, unfortunately. They even make a whole thing about it in the second
one.
She's
a slut. What,
where she always falls in love with the bad guy.
Fair enough. She fell in love with the bad guy, I think, at least in the first one.
Sex always comes into play with work for her. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, okay, girl, like, keep your pants on.
I mean, Drew Barrymore needs to get hers.
Does she have to get it while on the job? Inappropriate.
I mean...
Interfering.
She's just doing what the other Angels could not.
She almost died. But that is probably my favorite scene in the whole movie, where you think she was killed, and then they show how she wasn't. I was like, so far-fetched, but I'll fucking take it.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Rockwell, like, what a bad shot that was on his part. It's like, you had one job.
Yeah. But, yeah, so the very different personalities that they really, like, live up to, but they get along really well.
They do. I actually think what I like, not necessarily the personalities, was kind of the fact that, like, the creators of this movie, they really wrote them out to be flawed. And not flawed in the sense of, like, they have some major baggage. Flawed in the sense that they're human and, like, for example, Lucy Liu's character, she can't cook.
Mm-hmm.
And also she's having a hard time with her secret identity and her boyfriend, played by Matt LeBlanc.
Yes.
With Cameron Diaz. I know their actress's name. I don't know their character name. Sorry.
Natalie.
But Cameron Diaz, her character, for example, she is awkward when talking with men.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that she wants is a boyfriend. And then Drew Barrymore, she is having relationship troubles, right? Where she kind of is sort of into Tom Green's character, but he's kind of a whack job and she knows she can do better. Mm-hmm. That's why she ends up sleeping with Sam Rockwell and kind of realizes like, oh no, I messed up. I should have stayed with Tom Green.
The Chad was great.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting because while I'm sitting here listening to you, their lives outside of Charlie have purely to do with having boyfriends.
Who?
Their lives outside of Charlie have to do with boyfriends.
I mean, yeah. Well, you put it that way, yes. It does.
And I'm like, the only time we even see their family in the second one is when John Cleese thinks that his daughter is a fucking prostitute. So everything has to do around sex.
I don't remember the second one.
Oh yeah, I ended up watching it.
Okay.
And then the second one, Demi Moore is there, and she's an angel gone bad. And
she's not one of the original angels. She's supposed to be from that era, though.
Yeah, like post 1976 cast, pre-2000s movies cast.
So this is why I argue that these movies are technically revivals, mm-hmm. because they're still honoring the original continuity from the original program. And yes. even Jacqueline Smith's character
yes, in Full Throttle.
In the second one.
Yeah. So. Like, Dylan is having a crisis and she just goes to like a random bar, and then like, as if she's like godsend, divine intervention, Jacqueline Smith appears mm-hmm. and tells her, what the fuck are you doing? Get back with the angels. They need you. But the second movie also had a confusing thing with what a Bosley is, because Bernie Mac was Bosley in the second one due to drama on the set in the first one. But
so tell me about this drama.
Well, apparently Bill Murray was a flat out dick to Lucy Liu.
Uh-huh.
Apparently at one time during films, he looks at Cameron Diaz and goes, I know why you're here. And looks at Drew Barrymore and says, I know why you're here.
You bought the screen rights.
You bought the screen rights. And then he looks at Lucy Liu and says, but why are you here?
Yeah, because apparently she couldn't act.
Yeah.
Which is, wow. Like, to say that about dick. Lucy Liu. Because she was, I don't know, she performed wonderfully in that movie, I think.
Yeah, I didn't think she was a bad actress.
Yeah. Like, she played stoic, but that's how her character was written. Like, yeah. to be kind of stoic and one note. So what are mm-hmm. you talking about? I actually did not like Bill Murray in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, he was phoning it in. He didn't need to be. It could have really been anyone. He wasn't like Bill Murray
right.
in this movie. I think this was also before Bill Murray's big comeback with the Wes Anderson movies and uh-huh. Lost in Translation and stuff. So he was just kind of like just phoning it in so hardcore. Wasn't you even funny or it, charming.
Uh-huh.
He didn't really have this set chemistry. And he took that whole uncle thing a little too far. But his character even seemed kind of useless.
His character was useless.
Like, he almost like needed the angels to function, or else he was just kind of there. He was just more of an information giver.
Mm-hmm.
But he sometimes partook in, you know, their cons with them.
We're it's, recording, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the red button.
Yeah, I see the number now.
Yeah.
Good. I'm just like, we paused it, but did we record? Okay.
But, yeah, so he, yeah, I didn't like him in this one, but I didn't like Bosley in any of these films. I didn't like Bernie Mac's Bosley.
I agree. It's interesting, though, the Bosley thing, but that's kind of when they started adding this continuity that, like, Bosley isn't just a person. Bosley is an idea.
Yeah.
It's so...
Bosley, I guess so.
Yeah. Like, that's where...
Well, first it started that the Bosleys were a family.
Yeah, and that... Yeah, so Bosley... They were brothers. Mm-hmm. So Bosley is actually a family name. But then it's like, but now I'm a Bosley now, like with Shia LaBeouf.
Second
one.
Yeah, well, Shia LaBeouf?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was a baby.
It's Even Stevens era?
Yes.
I don't remember the second one at all. All I remember is Drew Barrymore.
The Bosleys adopt him.
Oh. I just remember Drew Barrymore in a bikini and a fur coat with a gun.
No, that's Demi Moore.
Who did I say?
Drew Barrymore.
Oh, you're right. Demi Moore.
Yeah.
Obviously.
That's worth remembering.
It's a good scene. Like, yeah. It's just like, talk about, I mean, of all the outfits I remember in these two movies, I would say that one, which is a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
In the first one, I'm going to say when the girls were dressed up as those German or those, you know, they're doing like yodeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you remember this?
I remember that. Yeah.
That costume, which actually will show up in the 2019 version.
What do you think about the exploitation of sex in this one? Do you think that this is another one where it's like the girls know exactly what they're doing and they're using it? Or do you think the movie got kind of carried away with doing it?
Oh, good question. I think this one, the movie got carried away more so than the original one.
100%.
Because anytime like they were sexualized was for the camera and not for the purpose of the movie.
Yes.
Like, for example, I mean, one of the opening scenes is fucking Cameron D just shaking her ass in mm-hmm. front of the camera.
That's true.
Like, and that served no purpose to mm-hmm. the story or her character. All we just find out from her that she likes to dance. There's the other one where Lucy Liu like bends over provocatively to like kind of fix the broken machine that like where you take your order.
Mm-hmm.
Like a drive-through machine. Yeah. And you know, it's like a provocative scene, but again, it was like it doesn't push the story forward. It's not, she's not using her sexuality here in order to get ahead. They're just exploiting their sexuality here for the camera.
For the camera, yeah. And even like when like they're purposely using their sexuality to get what they need in terms of their investigation, they take it a bit far. Like that scene where they're doing the yodeling thing, where the device is actually in the tuba. And all they really need there is the tuba to get the man's eye print, which can happen apparently 2 seconds. But of course, you need, you know, girls slapping each other's butt, singing and yodeling a song for a man to hold his attention.
Interesting. That one bothered me less rewatching it, just because like I know what they were doing. They were mm-hmm. again, this is the male gaze, right?
Yes.
So they're like exploiting the male gaze.
Yes. But again, it even goes a little bit too far. I know why, but they could have done it a certain toned down level. Mm-hmm. Even when it's supposed to be used, especially for that circumstances, it's like, that's how you do it. Really?
Yeah. So.
But I'll give the movie credit. There was this one scene that I loved where they're like at a dinner and they were just like there for Bill Murray to be like kind of, you know, like to make him look rich and powerful. So they were his dates.
Mm-hmm.
And Cameron Diaz character is bartending. This man approaches Lucy Liu while she's on the job. She's like, no. And he's like, I wondered if she's no.
Yes.
And he kept talking. She's like, no. Just keeps shutting him down. And I'm like, that's how you fucking... do it. And well, I really loved that.
She tended to, Lucy Liu tended to have the better moments like that. One of my favorite moments of hers is when the two, like Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz are dressed in drag.
Mm-hmm.
And she's dressed as like this leather dominatrix walking down the hall,
yeah,
giving the biggest attitude to poor Melissa McCarthy. What does she deserve?
I couldn't believe that was Melissa McCarthy. I didn't know
obviously who she was then, and it's rewatching it now. I'm just like, oh my God, that's Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, and that was a little weird to see too, because I'm like, this is the only woman in the workforce. Why couldn't you be nicer to her? I know you have to like exploit these guys, but why are you being a dick to her? Oh God, and there was also, in the second one, there was this whole dance scene in like a really provocative like sex club that they did where I'm like, did they have to do that?
Yeah.
So I think like they took it a bit too far.
Let's not just also forget there was like moments that are not okay by today's PC standards.
Mm-hmm.
When, for example, when they dress up as not geishas, but like they're dressing up in traditionally Japanese clothing, and what's the song they decide to play?
Turning Japanese.
I'm turning Japanese. I'm just like, yeah. Geez, like this could be problematic.
Yeah, this was so 20 years ago.
Yeah, it definitely showed his age.
Did we like those movies? The Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu movies? Did we like them, guys? Revisiting them?
Yes.
I did. It was campy.
Revisiting? Yeah. Yes. And that is the word for it.
It's campy, and I felt the jokes landed well.
Most of them did.
I feel like when it was funny, and then it was an action movie,
yeah,
too.
So. Actually, that's a great point, Eddie. This movie, obviously, is a comedy. It mm-hmm. is a comedy with like action, and the action sequences, I think sometimes it could be a little on the comical end, but they were, I think, to a degree, so well executed.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do think where this movie is successful is kind of finding the satire of the original one and
yes.
not making fun of it,
mm-hmm.
kind of honoring it, but just changing the genre up.
I think so too.
Yeah.
And I think that I like the fact that it doesn't take itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. I like that it's an ode to something that was before, but like giving it, it's like at that time, you know, like contemporary appeal and overturn of it. And I like it that at the end of the day, like, this is a popcorn movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a good old-fashioned have fun at the theater. But also, like, between, you know, women, like, using their sexuality for, like, their own, like, for good, you know, to, like, get the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And to use it as a weapon, almost, because sexuality is a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And being in full control of it. But also, really at that line where it's, like, it's fun and it's light and not taking itself too seriously.
Yes.
Which is something that the next movie doesn't really know.
The next movie is definitely a mixed bag.
It really is, yeah. So let's go to 2019.
Flash forward.
Here we are. So 2019, Charlie's Angels has yet another revival. We did a whole mini-sode on this a couple of months ago. Let's play a little bit about that and our thoughts on that.
Do you think this property will age well? Like, is this Me Too moment? Do you think that's going to be addressed at all?
I think that the advantage that they have of a female director, female Bosley, is definitely going to put it into, like, it's going to take Charlie's Angels and it's going to go a left turn with it in a good way that I think people are going to be happy for. But, like, of course, you know, we'll see how they address that. Now, here it is. We've seen this movie. We were excited for this. After seeing this movie, what are your thoughts?
Good question. I think this movie succeeds in some areas
mm-hmm.
and kind of drops the balls in others.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think where the biggest success is actually kind of the characters. I actually found myself very much enamored with the three girls. Mostly, here's why. Also, I will say this, like, I'm not the biggest fan of Kristen Stewart, mm-hmm. but I think Kristen Stewart kind of knocked it out of the park for me in this movie,
wow.
to be totally honest. And I think where kind of the movie kind of falls, and here's spoiler alert, guys, is kind of taking the continuity from the original one and kind of messing things up a little bit. Bosley. This is where I kind of took the biggest issue with it. And it's not that I'm necessarily against change, because I like this idea of making, like, you know, in this version, right? Like, Patrick Stewart plays Bosley. He's supposed to be the first Bosley. So he's supposed to be the Bosley that we see in the TV show, as there was like a little nice montage of photographs, and we see him like with the original girls and even the Charlie's Angels that we grew up with in 2000, you know? I think it's kind of making this idea of making him the bad guy was just kind of like, I don't know if I like that.
Ooh.
So, and the story was kind of like, yeah, a little on the weaker side for me.
Well, like I said, the first Charlie's Angels movie had a mystery to it and had a, like, kind of like a a left field of like whodunit and like, oh my God, now it's actually this person betrayed us. And this movie very much had that. And I just, it was so similar to the first one in terms of like the angels being played and then the angels not knowing who to trust and then using themselves. And there was a lot of similar beats that I felt weren't done well compared to the first one, because this movie, unlike the Charlie's Angels 2000, took itself more seriously.
You think so?
I think so.
I don't think it took itself so seriously.
I think that if it didn't take itself too seriously and it was trying to be more humorous, then it didn't do the best job of that.
I think that's part of the problem, though. Now, yeah. I don't think it's that it took itself so seriously. I just think that some of the jokes just didn't land.
They did not land.
Yeah, it was distracting.
Yeah,
to a point, because there's a point where I'm feeling, oh my God, this is almost like a cool Mission Impossible
mm-hmm.
kind of movie, and then there's the joke, and sometimes it's about someone who died, and I just felt like, hey, yeah. But it's not funny. I don't know. It just didn't come out as funny.
It's, yeah, a lot of the jokes. Oh, he'll wake up. Yeah, those weren't. It's interesting that you said that about Kristen Stewart.
I actually laughed at that joke. It's just because and the reason I laughed at that joke was because, like, you know, he'll wake up. But then the two other girls make eye contact, like,
Yeah.
I shook my head because they had, like, kind of like the eye contact they made with you. It was like, no,
yeah,
he's dead. But I laughed at that one.
Well, just to piggyback
maybe
off,
maybe just understand Elizabeth Banks' humor.
Maybe you do. I wonder what her sign is. If she's an earth sign, then you guys really get along. But can we look that up? When was Elizabeth Banks born?
I could probably.
But,
find
her.
You got it?
I got it. Okay. But, and just a rebuttal to what you say, and then I want to talk about what the movie's actually about. I also completely disagree about Kristen Stewart.
Really?
What was she born?
February 10th.
Oh, so she's an Aquarius.
I don't know what that means.
She's an air sign.
I'm a Capricorn. Aren't we,
an
like,
earth
also
sign.
Water?
No, you're earth.
Capricorns are water?
You're earth. So the movie, the plot about this Charlie's Angels is very much, it's still a Townshend agency, except by 2019, the Townshend agency has expanded.
Yeah, so it's basically like Men in Black International.
Yes.
This is what I got a little bit of vibes of.
Yeah, let's shoot.
Nowhere near as bad.
Yeah, we
in terms of a movie.
We covered Men in Black recently, too. Yes. So check out that episode. But they definitely went international. There's agencies all over the world, and they're all like to the point where you can access anything that belongs to the Townsend agency like that. My mm-hmm. favorite thing is where it's like Bosley 312, enter safe house 607.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was cool. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, they have safe houses all over the world. You know, they're able to like call in the people that they need. There's not just three of them. They have worldwide connects. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then it took this whole idea of like a Bosley, which is kind of like a ranking. Mm-hmm. Well, according to this movie, Patrick Stewart was that original Bosley.
Yes, he was supposed to be playing
John Bosley.
He was the Bosley of the original Farrah Fawcett, Kate Jackson, Jacqueline Smith ones, and of Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Lucy Liu.
Did you love the flashback with the pictures of him? Like,
yeah, I was like, oh my God.
So that's where I'm actually curious. I don't think he was the Bosley from that movie, though. I think he was he?
Yeah, they superimposed his face on Bill Murray.
But because that Bosley was the same Bosley from the 70s one.
But according to this movie, it was.
I think they just took pictures together, but I don't think it was the same Bosley.
Okay, yeah. There's a possibility. Yeah.
No, because
then it's expanded.
I distinctly looked at those photos and I'm like, they superimposed him to be these characters.
I mean, that's true. They did superimpose him. So, all right, fine. You might be right.
And so this movie does a little bit of retconning there, too.
Yes.
Where it's like all those other the angels existed, but the Bosleys didn't exist because I guess it wanted it to hit home more. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, guys, I'm sorry, but Bosley's the bad guy.
You don't have to say spoiler. No one watches this movie, apparently.
Yeah, this movie was a major flop.
It was a bomb.
It was pretty much a bomb.
I predicted it.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, like, and we'll get to that later. But interestingly enough, how did you feel about that?
Well, like I said, I wasn't a fan of, like, kind of changing my continuity. That's where I kind of was just kind of like, I left a bad taste in my mouth. Because it was so obvious that it could not have been the previous angel who was being played by... Elizabeth Banks, right? It mm-hmm. couldn't be her because she was a previous angel who rose the ranks to become a Bosley, the first that's ever happened, right? So, and even when they're all kind of like the other angels are kind of figuring out who is the whodunit, like mm-hmm. who's a backstabber, they even said it's just like, well, it's not the first time this happened before. I'm like, yeah, that's why it's not going to be in this movie her. Drew Barrymore was the first angel to kind of backstab everybody.
Drew Barrymore.
I keep saying Drew Barrymore. Demi Moore,
yeah. Which I think they were referencing there.
Yes.
So the plot of this movie is that there is kind of like an Alexa device that this corporation, do we remember the corporation? There was a product like Alexa. You know, it's like this little home device that you can hold in your hands and give it commands by your voice and it will, you know, but this has more.
Callisto.
The Callisto. And the Callisto can do more than the Alexa. The Callisto can power an entire city, apparently.
It can generate power.
It can. So clean it's energy. But there right now is a flaw within this Callisto. And apparently a big flaw is that it can be used as a weapon.
Yes.
But the owners, or at least the president of the company who have Callisto, is too impatient. He wants to go to market now.
You're led to believe that it's technically only the one who wants to move it to market is... one of the higher ups in the company, not necessarily the owner, because it seemed like the owner was oblivious to it. Mm-hmm. It's not until the very end when it's revealed that the owner kind of sort of knew about it, but didn't really want to know because it's called plausible deniability that he would have if anything should happen.
Yes.
Yes.
So what was the name of that character?
I don't know, but he was fucking hot. Eddie has told me that he's from The Hunger Games also. Wait, no. I for some reason, I thought Kristen Stewart was in The Hunger Games. She's not in The Hunger Games.
That's Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence, thank
but
you.
Elizabeth Banks is in the game.
Yes, that's right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I thought that was a given, though.
I forgot. What?
I thought that was a given that Elizabeth Banks was in the Hunger
Games. I forget that she's in the Hunger Games because like she's in so much makeup.
I also mess up Elizabeth Banks and Chelsea Handler like all the time.
Really?
I just think they look exactly the same.
Elizabeth Banks is so much prettier.
She's the younger version of her.
Fair.
Yeah. So... the Callisto, the angels find out about it. The Townsend Agency finds out about it, and they are set to protect her.
Protect who?
The scientist who created the Callisto.
Yeah, the one who knows about the exploitation and yes. wants to run a repair, but the company doesn't want to let her do it because they have their own ulterior motives for it.
Yeah. Side note, guys, I have a migraine today, so if my thoughts are all over the place, it's because my head really hurts.
Elena,
thank you.
So what was the name of the actress?
Naomi Scott.
Naomi Scott. We have covered quite a lot of the stuff that she's been in a lot of remakes, reboots, and revivals.
Power Rangers and Aladdin.
And now Charlie's Angels. This is what's making her career. So thank God for the concept of remakes and reboots because this girl wouldn't have a career. What'd you think of her character, Elena?
The weakest out of the three, I think.
The weakest out of the three?
But I don't know if that was the actress's fault, obviously. Okay. I feel like she kind of had the best comic relief. Like, I think watching her fight for the first time, mm-hmm. like this big guy and stuff, and like kind of, because she's not trained for fighting, right?
Yeah.
She knows some Krav Maga, but it's like obviously like Krav Maga that they teach you in like Taekwondo or something.
Yeah.
So I like the comedy of like the physical comedy of watching her being overpowered but still winning that fight. It was a funny moment.
Well, we should explain that there's not really three angels in this one. There's two. Mm-hmm. And then they have a third girl that just is kind of there that then becomes an angel. And this is Elena. She's the creator, the main scientist behind Callisto. Mm-hmm. But they need her. She kind of gets caught up in everything, but they really do need her.
They do.
And her computer skills.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great moment, right, where she kind of gets up and she gives, like, her empowered speech about, like, why she should be involved. And the girls look at her like, yeah, you're part of this. We gave you the communicator. We gave you... I thought that was a...
You're in the brief, so you're in here. The other two are completely different in every way, in height, in skin color, in personality. And they're played by Kristen Stewart and...
Naomi Scott.
Thank you, Naomi Scott.
So then, wait, who is Elena?
Oh, wait, no, you're right. Naomi Scott is Elena. Hang on.
I'm sorry. Ella Balinski?
Ella Balinski.
It's played by Kristen Stewart and Ella Balinski.
Balinski.
Obviously...
It ends with the A, though.
No, but it's pronounced Balinski.
All right.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. No, Balinska, baby.
I'm sure everyone knows who Kristen Stewart is of Twilight fame and just internet fame. You know,
she's Twilight fame. She's like big in like lesbian circles, is she?
Yeah. So we all know who Kristen Stewart is. Kristen Stewart's character's name,
Sabina.
Is Sabina, right? Maybe a nod to Sabrina Duncan. Who knows? She is wisecracking. She's constantly hungry and wants to eat. That is the big thing about her character.
Does she?
Always talks about food. That's like her big thing.
Oh, I don't remember that.
That like they both have memories of Rio, and it's like, oh, why don't you like Rio? Oh, like someone. Oh no, why don't you like Istanbul? Oh, I fucked over someone there. She's like, oh, well, I had a really bad meal with food poisoning, but then I just wanted to eat again. Yeah. That could have been funny, and it wasn't.
Oh, I genuinely liked her character.
I found her like it was cute. She had these cute little moments, and it was a character that I did want to see more of.
Interesting.
Like to get an idea of her backstory, like that, like when it's revealed that she's really like
a spoiled heiress.
Yeah, an heiress, and it's hinted that she gets into some trouble, and then Charlie kind of like recruits her.
Mm.
She was very effervescent in this role.
Wow, you guys are really nice.
I actually genuinely did. I think
and that's surprising for him because he looks for any moment to say something critical about her.
I do. The only time I've ever liked her in anything was in a skit in Saturday Night Live when we'll make sure we add that to the show notes. It's Tostinos? A great skit. Huh? The Tostinos. It's yes, that's such a good skit.
Yeah, but that was also more Vanessa Bayer.
Oh, of course. No. Yeah, but I'm saying is like this was the only time I've ever liked her like in anything. And Charlie's Angels has become the next time I've ever liked her in anything because I think she really did such a good job of kind of playing like this kind of fun character. It's the first time I saw her having fun in a role, which I don't think she as an actress has gotten many opportunities to do.
Okay, I could see that. I mean, like I don't think that she's a bad actress per se. But I also think that maybe it was her lines, maybe it was the script. I thought that those jokes about her eating were beating a dead horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that there was, I mean, I don't need much development, but like if that's all they gave me, then like that wasn't enough for me.
What are your thoughts on her being coded as lesbian?
In this movie?
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on it.
Really? She like, yeah, there was like the scene where like she's dressed up in like her super short booty shorts and workout gear.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she passes like a hot woman, like she like doubles back and kind
of
looks.
That was one scene.
There were other instances of like her kind of hinting that she is at least into women also. So we had this problem when we talked about Terminator last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like either go there or don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt that with this. It's just like, you know, make her straight up lesbian. Give me the coded lesbian.
I don't agree with you at all with that.
Okay.
I really feel like sometimes maybe leave it in the mystery because sometimes we don't always have to announce our sexuality or our preferences. We should just be like, we live. We connect who we're attracted to, you know? Doesn't have to always be spelled out. I don't need it to be spelled out in a film. Yeah, I just don't need it like, oh, she's the lesbian character.
Exactly.
Or the gay character.
In
stuff
this
like
movie,
that.
Completely agree with Eddie. In Terminator, I more agree with you because it was based on, that whole movie was founded on their chemistry and the sexual chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't deliver. This movie's about three crime-fronting women.
Fair.
I don't think their sexuality means anything. And I'm really tired of another movie and yet where it's like, oh, the Ella Balinski character like finds that boy that just like, that whole side thing
yes,
did not
I
make
agree with you.
Any
that
sense.
Was definitely that was just terrible. That was just like just shoved in there and it made no sense despite how attractive John Noah Centineo is.
Yeah. Elena didn't have a love thing. She'd had no love triangle or whatever. And as far as I know, Kristen Stewart didn't, and I preferred it that way. I didn't need any of that. So I saw those little things, but I really didn't think much about them. Mm-hmm. What I did think about when I was watching this movie was I was feeling a little bit like there was a little heavy hands going on with. This is really hard for me to say, too, because as a woman, as a feminist, you know, I really strive for certain things, but I want things to be done well. And I was getting a lot of heavy-handed, some kind of feminist in this movie.
No, yeah, you're not mistaken in that. This is definitely like, rah, rah, we're women.
Yeah, hear like that score. Opening.
Yes.
First of all, the first line of the movie is, I believe women can do anything. Mm-hmm. And then Kristen Stewart's character is talking to this multimillionaire who thinks just women are good for sex and for cleaning, and then that's it.
Australian and Rick, I think is his name.
He's
something like that.
Yeah, he lives in Rio, and he's an Asian man. His name is Australian Rick or something like that.
Because he's from Australia.
Whatever. So
Kristen Stewart, he had an Australian accent, though.
But. But she's like pretending that, you know, she's just some dumb girl who is there to fuck him. And she's like really playing with him sexually and all this stuff, like with her body language. But then she's like saying, well, women can do anything. Women can do this. And it was just like a bit heavy handed. Then it goes into this whole montage of stock footage of really successful women throughout the world. Real women who are doing real things like doctors and lawyers and teachers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And although it was cute, it was a bit much because I'm watching fucking Charlie's Angels here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need you to make like this weird. I personally, as a feminist, don't need you to make a statement here. And then like it kind of just kept coming up. And then with having Bosley, a major character, a major guy who was always on their sides, who loved them, who was practically an angel, be a betrayer. The same one, apparently, according to this movie, from the 70s cast, from the 2000s cast, have all of this resentment towards women because he's a man and it's always men versus women, was very unsettling.
I agree. You know what? I think that might be also part of the reason why I just did not like this Bosley.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. I think at the very end, that all kind of comes out in the read, like kind of the 100%. Way he treats these women and the kind of way that he reacted to them, despite the fact that all the women in the party turned out to be angels themselves.
Yeah, that was like nice and stuff, but then became men versus women. And there's a fine line from feminism to misandry.
Oh, okay. Go on.
And when that happened at the end, too, although it was this really nice, like, oh, all the women there are angels, and like everywhere you go, there's an angel and all this stuff. And I was like, having him, this character that we've come to learn, you know, like that this, according to this movie, is a character that we've loved in every iteration of Charlie's Angels before, and his relationship with women means that men aren't capable. Because also, this Bosley is a woman. Elizabeth Banks is Bosley. Mm-hmm. So it's purely women. And in this version, Charlie is a woman.
Yes, let's talk about that. Jacqueline Smith is revealed to be Charlie because John Forsythe is dead, but she's using a voice box to alter her voice to still sound like Charlie.
And then they do, and because you always see the back of Charlie, like in the 2000s, John Forsythe came back because he was still alive, and you see his back on the beach and all this stuff. And this one, you see a woman at a desk, and she's using a voice controller, and it's turning into the voice of John Forsythe. Really cool. Loved that, but everyone who's good is a woman. Everyone who's bad, for the most part, other than the Bosley who dies, is a man.
No, Noah Centineo's character, the love interest for Bella.
Of the love interest, and then their guru or something. That's about it.
Oh, Saint. Yeah, Saint is another good male character. Saint was also kind of coded gay, though.
That's where I felt like, oh, this is coming off as misandrist, honestly, though, because it was like men and women can't be friends. You know, there's never going to be like animosity. There's always going to be a like line drawn and whose side are you on? And now we're getting the point of view from women. And it's like, because I don't even know if Elizabeth Banks is trying to consciously say this. I think she's trying to make a movie where we just see more women at the forefront. But because she's doing that so openly and like that's like her main goal, it's coming off as misandrist.
Yes, yeah. I understand what you're going. I was actually just going to ask, like, do you think that maybe, I don't know Elizabeth Banks' career that well. Mm-hmm. I know her from 30 Rock. She was one of my favorite. Avery Jessup was one of my favorite characters. But yeah. I think, is it possible that maybe she does feel this way? Like maybe she had some awful experience with like men in Hollywood and this is how she channels it.
And like, if that's the case, then like it is what it is, you know, like I can't put her personal experiences to shame here, where she pretty much said that they'll go and see a comic book movie with Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel because that's a male genre. So even though those are movies about women, they put them in the context of feeding them the larger comic book world. Mm. So it's all about, yes, you're watching a Wonder Woman movie, but we're setting up other characters, or we're setting up Justice League for a male world.
She's not wrong about that. She's not calling out the movie itself, because mm-hmm. its movie was directed by a woman. I'm pretty sure it was also written.
Yeah.
But yes, I would wholeheartedly agree with her that the superhero genre is primarily directed at men.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. So she's not wrong. I think the other comment that she had that, like, I don't know if that was on Twitter, it was an interview, but like, they had asked her basically, like, it's just like, yo, like, does Charlie's Angels need to get rebooted again? And her reaction was just like, we've had 37 different Spider-Men in like the last decade. Like, why can't we get the Charlie's Angels?
Yeah.
And I agree with her on that too. It's just,
I do. And like, in theory, yeah, like, why would we go see Spider-Man and it like crack number one all the time at the box office, but Charlie's Angels can't? But at the same time, is Charlie's Angels exactly like the platform that she needs to kind of prove her point? Because she didn't prove her point. She proved her point in the sense where people will go see the other movies because they're more typically male defined.
Uh-huh.
But I think also after seeing the movie, I don't know if the trailer really came off this way, but after seeing the movie where it was so overtly feminist and so overtly trying to make it like, hey, you know, women can be cool too. And like, it was almost like, why are you telling this to me? Why can't you just show it to me?
I remember the trailer kind of focused more so on like the fashion and kind of being the girly, mm-hmm. which is what I got the sense of. So for example, weapons. I think Naomi Scott's character Elena sees like the closet, and then like next Elizabeth Banks comes out, she's just like, did you see, oh, I see you saw the first closet, and she's like, there's another one. And it's like really focusing on kind of like playing dress up and being cool.
Yeah. And here's another complaint I have. If you're going to also make a movie where you're like, it's feminism, it's women empowerment and all this stuff, then there were a couple of lines there that should not have been there. Like when they were like, we know everything about you. Oh, and your Twitter? Yeah, you can use a little bit airbrushing or do something to your cheekbones so that your Twitter could be like, you're going to give her advice on her Twitter? That character would never say that. The movie sets up a certain type of environment that I would never believe that that character would say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because also I wouldn't believe that the context of this world that we're looking at would, like, the way that they hate all the men that they come into contact with. And then it's like, oh, but you should make yourself pretty for this app. It just seemed so out of character. And I felt like that character had never, I'm like, yeah, she's lonely, but her character, which was one of the things I appreciated, she could have been a lesbian, you know? So it was just like this sexualization that I was like, okay, this movie's getting confused now.
That movie definitely felt like it was confused.
So, and yeah, and that's the thing, like, the jokes fell flat, you know, like beaten dead horses. We're not even talking about Ellie Belinska and her character, but she was like the stern, like really like focused, kind of almost like you need to relax character, like, you know, like treat yourself to a spa day and have a laugh.
She was a former spy, M5.
Yeah,
she...
MI5, yeah.
Is it
MI6. Oops. We're Americans. And then like her character is the one that, like, at one point when she thinks she's losing an angel, like, has this big breakdown and she cries, and then she finds love at the end, and it just, all of it just didn't,
whoa. She did not find love. She found
a potential
strange
fuck buddy.
Okay. Yeah. And that's in terms of the penis that you could get in this movie. That's a catch.
Well, he was not bad.
I mean, I preferably would have preferred the CEO, the multimillionaire CEO, but that's just me.
Alexander Brock.
Oh, thank you.
I liked his character because he was a rich asshole, and that just felt like the most realistic
portrayal. Yeah, I was hoping
portrayal.
He would be, like, in the beginning. Yeah. He did seem to be concerned about some things, and then at the end, he's like...
And that seemed like the
just
most realistic
thing. Just crying like a baby.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't hear this. I'm not here. Going back to my party.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, movie had its flaws and stuff. I think the movie was strongest was the three angels.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, I have nothing against their acting, and they're good actresses, but there's just something up with the movie where everything just kind of felt thrown in there. Mm-hmm. So when there was a laugh, it wasn't funny. Yeah. When there was an action sequence, it was purely okay. You know, when there was a twist, I was just like, not about it. And that, I guess, just comes to overall, you know, a big reason why this movie was made was because of Elizabeth Banks' theories is that we need more of, like, women-led action movies that are kind of made for, I think, I would hope everyone instead of just women.
Yeah, I can't imagine that she would say that, like, it's only
just for women. But was this movie needed? A lot of people are, like, firing back at her and saying, you know, yeah, we agree that, you know, we want movies outside of, like, a male genre, but, like, your movie kind of flopped because nobody was interested. It didn't look good. It looked generic. Like, don't blame this.
I don't think has she blamed anything? She hasn't played that blame game, I'll say.
No, I mean,
the movie flopped. It was a bad, it was, I would say it's a mediocre movie.
Yeah.
But some people would say it's a bad movie. I would say it's just like, all right, you had good intentions. It was just bad execution.
Prior to the film's releasing, she was like kind of like saying, well, you know, the Spider-Man thing and like Wonder Woman and all this stuff. Come after it, she just stand by her film and she's proud of it. And that's great. I have nothing wrong with Elizabeth Banks. But at the end of the day, too, if your movie makes me fucking squirm in my seat because I feel too much of like you and your kind of like political intentions, mm-hmm. then you made a bad movie.
Mm.
And I do think that this was a bad movie. And I do think we didn't need it, especially because it's one of these movies that is kind of also making me be like, God damn it, this person's on my side and they're giving me a bad rap. You know?
Uh-huh.
Like when you see those liberals who just take their like thoughts so fucking far and do so many, just make liberals look like assholes, right. And you just want to smack them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
This is kind of like how I felt about this movie.
All right. Fair. I think I do agree with you. I don't think this is the remake we needed.
Yeah.
Or like revival we needed. I wish it was better.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the performances from the three main leads and Elizabeth Banks herself. It was just a weak movie overall, though.
Yeah.
That's the only problem.
It's too bad. I mean, we never really needed this movie, so you don't think we needed it.
I don't think we needed it. I think Charlie's Angels, you would think right now, in this era right now,
mm-hmm.
would be timely. I just think it has to be done properly.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
So this iteration is not what we needed. But I feel like Charlie's Angels would always be welcome.
No, for sure. Lightning round. Let's first do Bosley's.
Okay.
Who's your favorite?
Elizabeth Banks is Bosley.
David Doyle.
Ugh. Yeah, all right.
Why?
I don't know. He's just like kind of just, all right, fine. He helped them.
Yeah, I guess because he was like, you know, an older, fairly unattractive man compared to younger, drop-dead gorgeous women, which I also think the term drop-dead gorgeous like really came into prominence with this TV show.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like, you know what? We're friends. And he was part of the team. And I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Let's compare Sabrina, Lucy Liu's character,
Alex,
and Jane.
That's right. Her name Belinsky. Was Jane. Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also, because like, come on, it's the literal only Asian out of all the angels.
Yeah. Good point.
And she was really strong. I really like Lucy Liu.
I mean, Ella Belinsky is the only black angel out of.
Yeah. Yeah. And look at all the white angels we've gotten.
Who's the next one? I would say comparing Cameron D to, is she Farrah Fawcett?
I guess Farrah Jill Fawcett. Monroe.
Yeah, Jill Monroe.
To,
I guess in this, I guess it'd probably be Elena, to be honest.
Elena, yeah. Not Elena. I guess I'll go with Jill Monroe.
I actually am going to go with Jill Monroe for sure.
Iconic. Yeah. She's iconic.
Mm-hmm,
Farrah
mm-hmm.
fucking Fawcett.
Okay, so last one is
Kelly Garrett. Dylan, Drew Barrymore.
Uh-huh.
And Sabina, Kristen Stewart.
Ooh.
Don't
okay.
say it.
I actually might go with Kristen Stewart.
Oh, Jesus. Why?
I actually liked Kristen Stewart's character in this. I thought she was fun.
But Drew Barrymore and Kelly Garrett?
I didn't see enough of Kelly Garrett to make an opinion. Eddie, am I wrong in picking Sabina over Kelly Garrett?
I really did like Kristen Stewart in this one.
See?
I mean, you're never wrong for your opinion, but like...
You're wrong. You're wrong.
I mean, for me, it's really tough between... There's Sabina pays no real competition to Dylan versus Kelly. Oof. I guess I'll go with Dylan. I just love Drew Barrymore. Okay. You know, I recently rewatched Never Been Kissed, and she's just so charming. There's just never going to be anyone like Drew Barrymore again. One of a kind.
I mean, I like Santa Clarita Diet, but she plays a zombie, so.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that.
That is that.
That's all there we wrote on Charlie's Angels.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
That's right. Happy Turkey Day. Send us pictures of what you're eating.
Yes, please do.
You know, we might post them on our social feed.
I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
We hope you have a great holiday. Man. This one was a bit long, so we're just going to wrap it up.
Yes.
And until next time,
stay unoriginal.